Okay, Shalom Aleichem,
Gute Woche.
This is Hashem, we should see it be a good Chodesh of Sosem B'Simcha Mitzvah Hashem. Okay, we are in till the end of Shar Avodas Elokim, 10th Perek. I'm sorry, I found the page, but I don't know what number it is.
342.
Page 342 in the English. We're in the middle of discussing the Chavis Halavis' discussion about the correct application of each of our midas. Again, based on the understanding that every midah has its place, and it's all about learning how to control, to harness our midas, get our midas into our control, not to be controlled by our midas. If you can do that, then all of your midas are good midas. You make sure to apply them all in the place where it's called for, even the so-called bad midas, in the places where they're called for. And the other side of the coin is, even the so-called good midas have their rare situations where you have to overcome them too. So we discussed a few examples. Now, one of the big temptations of a person who gives a shiurim on a regular basis, this is one of the, is after every shiur, this is invariable. After every shiur, all the things I should have said, they pop into my head afterwards and I forgot to say and I should have said. And then to come back the next time and say, oh, last time we... So after some experience, I overcoming that too. I don't know if it's good me or not. Whatever it is, I overcome that too. And usually say, okay, we always move on. We don't go back to should haves and could haves. I'm going to make an exception now because this is not something that adds a geschmack, but I think that there was an omission last week, which I think is very important. Last week, we were discussing the place of tikva, which we were calling optimism. Right, we were discussing, when do you go with an attitude of, I better be scared here, maybe this is not a good idea? And when do you go with an approach of, no, it'll be okay, I'm going to move ahead? So we said last week, the way the Chavis Halavos put it was, Mekayim HaTikva is when you are engaged in things that will get you to Olam Haba. Now, as we discussed last week, I'm recapping briefly what we discussed then. When you're doing things that will get you to Olam Haba, you should be optimistic. So what does that mean exactly? Like, you're giving tzedakah, you should be optimistic. This is probably a good thing. It'll probably get me to Olam Haba. What does it mean to be what does it mean to be optimistic? Okay. What does it mean to be optimistic when you're doing a mitzvah that it'll probably be good? Of course, you do a mitzvah, you got to Olam Haba. So we discussed last week that he actually doesn't say mitzvahs. He says Ba'akdamas Hamavias HaToyveilov. But you know, let's forget the analysis of Losh right now and just get to the point. Last week we discussed that the idea is to be optimistic that you can succeed in your ruchnis. The understanding that Hashem gave us this system because he wants us to succeed. It's not that Hashem gave us sometimes, especially if a person, this is one of the, where learning Musar can potentially, everything can end up getting a person to the wrong place, even the greatest thing. Sometimes learning Musar can potentially get a person to a place, where, this is what the Yetzer Hara tries to do with Musar, where you say, look, the demands are so great. Negias is all over the place. The pitfalls are on every step of the way. Forget it, you'll never really succeed. Here, I'll show you stories of this person and that person. Forget it, you'll never really succeed. And this is where the Chavis Halavos is telling us, use the midah of optimism, meaning what? The understanding that, the way a Rebbe of mine put it is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not put minds under the feet of his children. Hashem didn't set up a minefield for us. Hashem set up for us a challenging course with, this chair might be more comfortable for you. Hashem set us up with a course that has challenges, but a course which is built for us to succeed in if we apply ourselves. Hashem gave us this system because of his love for us. And therefore, don't be scared off by the challenges. Don't be scared off by the failures. Understand that If you apply yourself seriously, conscientiously, that is the success. And this is what we mean when we say optimism when it comes to the hakdah. This is lashon hakdamas hamivias atavis elayich. When you are engaged in the prefaces of the things that will bring you the good, meaning you're trying to improve a certain nida, and you're frustrated because after 2 years you see very minimal progress. So to be able to tell yourself, I'm trying, this is what Hashem wants, this is the success, and I am succeeding. As long as you're in the ring fighting. You just sit back complacently and say, I'll succeed on autopilot, that I just saw from the Slonim Rebbe last week that he bought from, I forgot who, Kuprina Rebbe maybe. That the worst situation a Jew can get to is complacency. Everything's fine as is. He was applying that to the situation of the Churban, but it was actually said about a person's growth in life. But if we're applying ourselves, the understanding that we can and we will succeed. But I want to add another point, and here's the omission that I'm referring to. Specifically when it comes to tshuva. Specifically when it comes to tshuva. A person was failing in a certain area for a long time. It was a mess. Okay? Another machaver with a certain person was terrible. Decided he wanted to do tshuva. Or some temptation, some avera that a person fell prey to, whether on a one-time basis, whether on an ongoing basis. And here, what does the Yetzer Hara come and do? The Yetzer Hara comes and says, you're too far gone. You're too far gone. Here as well, we apply what the B'chel HaSavavis is telling us, that the place for optimism is when you are engaged in those things that are meant to bring you to that ultimate good. You're trying to approach tshuva, the understanding that if you want to know, can I successfully do tshuva, is one very clear test. No matter what the mess is, one very clear test. You put your finger to your pulse. If it's beating, then you can successfully do tshuva. Period. Now, that deserves elaboration. And we're not going to get into that elaboration now. Seder. Whatever the case is, it's that understanding. That, if you decide, I want to do tshuva, Hashem is waiting for you with open arms. In other words, it all comes back to the same point. The whole system is there because Hashem loves us and Hashem wants us to succeed. And He's there to help that happen. Okay, now we'll move on. Last week, we ended with the Mida of Gevura. We'll start again from there. You have another two Midas among your spread of Midas. Hagvura v'hamerech. Bravery, strength versus cowardice. Cowardice, how do you say it? Cowardice. When do you use the mid of Gevura? When you need to take up the fight against Oyve Hashem, people who are trying to fight Hashem. So that we discussed a bit last week, but here's another aspect of it. And to be able to withstand any tribulation, any test that Hashem puts you through. Here's where you have to tell yourself, I have more strength than I may have realized. I'm capable of doing this. I can do this. Like the pasuk says, we were killed over you all day. We were thought of as sheep for slaughter. This is what we call Jewish gvura, right? This is not what we call Jewish patheticness. To say, yes, I'm willing to stick out my neck for my principles. And Yalmeni Tzadik Chesed Yechicheni. And also, when Hashem deals me blows, It's coming from a place of righteousness. I realize that. I realize that it's for my good, and therefore I rise to the challenge. Okay, this is, of course, plenty of elaboration, but let's move on right now. But the point is that he's telling us, this is where Gvura comes in. You're facing a tough situation, facing a tough Nisayan, to be able to tell yourself, if Hashem put me into this situation, this means that he has faith in me. This means that he sees in me abilities that I might not realize that I have, and I'm going to bring them out. I can do it. I am a Gibor. Where is the place for cowardice? When you encounter lovers of Hashem, people who are loyal servants of Hashem, not to fight them. And to bow your head when you're being admonished for something. Like the pasuk says, Yan rach levavich v'tikon alif ne'ashem. Because your heart was softened and you've humbled yourself before Hashem, you'll be given another chance. This was said to one of the wicked malachim. So let's just understand this point. Where does a person bring fear into his heart? When a person, for some reason or the other, comes up against some sort of squabble, for whatever reason it would be, with a tzaddik, with an Oved Hashem, with a person who's on a greater level than himself, that's the time to say, I'm walking on eggshells. I'm walking on eggshells, and I better be careful. Right? That's the lashon of the Mishnah in Avos. Beware when you're dealing with Talmidei Chachamim. Beware when you're dealing with tzaddikim. Don't let yourself be burned by their coals. Okay. Now, you know what? We'll see a little bit more on this as we move a bit further. You have another two midas. Haboishes ve'azus. Shame versus brazenness, right? When do you talk back boldly? And when do you lower your head in shame? Mekam haboishes ba'amrois ha'metiv lach b'toivosoi alpanov uben yodov. When do you apply shame? When you understand that you have just repaid Hashem for the good he did with something bad. In other words, an avera. When a person does an avera, the way the Talmud Dvora puts it down is, let's say a person falls prey to the temptation of eating something forbidden, eating something you shouldn't have eaten. So he says you should sense how at the very time Hashem is, first of all, he's providing you with a tongue. And he's keeping the nerves alive. He's providing the blood flow to the tongue. He's making your taste buds work. And you are using the taiva that he's giving you at the time that he's giving it and throwing it in his face. Or if we speak hurtfully to another person, but taking the chesed that Hashem did, right? Take a deep breath. And with that deep breath, Hashem sends a whole flow of oxygen through our bodies, into our lungs, right? Our heart, through our bodies, keep us alive. And I utilize the power of speech that Hashem gave me to rip into another person while Hashem is supporting that koyach. So this should be a mortifying feeling. But then to be able to come back, after a person has failed, to be able to come back to Hashem afterwards and to lower his head and feel humiliated, to feel like I'm coming to ask for forgiveness now, especially if, let's say, it's the type of thing that a person has failed a few times in a certain area. And by now what happens is that the Yetzer Hara works. Again, we're coming back to the point that we discussed earlier. We're human beings. We're going to have struggles of different levels. Sometimes, you know, we decide something was wrong. We're not going to do it again, and that's that. Sometimes we have struggles. We succeed for some time and then we fail again. We succeed for some time, we fail again. Or we might fail a few times. And what the Yetzer Hara will try to do is give a certain feeling of I can't keep coming back to Hashem and saying I'm going to try harder, because I already did that a few times. So he just kind of tries to, I don't know how they say it in English, and he would say lahadchik, like to just kind of suppress the feelings and just kind of move on. Just move on. Because it reaches a point where it starts getting very, what am I supposed to do? Come back to Hashem again and say, I'm sorry again? But you know what? On the contrary, he's telling us that that's a valuable feeling. If a person can come back to Hashem the next time you daven and feel the mortification, realize that that mortification is a virtue. That mortification is applying the mida of busha in the right place. Don't run away from it. Face it, embrace it, and realize that that feeling of mortification is actually building you up spiritually. It's very good. So here's the time to apply the mida of mortification rather than run away. And then he continues, Ubahichichai oisach be'edov hatovim v'arayim upgias neviyov. Also, the time to use the midah of shame is when you are being admonished by, whether it's his good edim or his bad edim or his neviim. Let's explain what this means. The neviim, it was tough to live with neviim. You know what? This might actually tie into the inyan adiyam right now. It was tough to live with neviim. We have to realize that. The reason that we don't have neviim today, you know, this is already going to cover the next few lines in the Chavis Al-Vavis, and also tie us into our subject, to the time that we're in right now. You know when Eicha was written? When was Megillas Eicha written? What's that? What?
The first temple destruction. No?
You said that the first temple destruction, before or after?
Before.
That's right. That's something that people don't realize. Yashukoyach. It was written before the Churban. Megillas Eicha was written before the Churban as a warning to the Jewish people, describing in vivid terms the feelings and the scene afterwards. Who was it written by? It was written by Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Yirmiyahu HaNavi was the Navi prophesying about the Churban, right? What did he do with Megillas Eicha? He took it to the king at the time, Yehoyachin. He took it to him and showed it to him. This is what you can expect unless there are going to be drastic changes. Yehoyachin became furious and he took the Megillah, he threw it into the fire. There was a fire burning at his side. And he threw it into the fire. Yirmiyahu had it written up again by his Talmud Baruch. Okay. It was even more than that. Right? Yirmiyahu suffered terribly because of his nevuahs. Yirmiyahu was coming and saying things that were terrible things to say. Hashem's house will be destroyed. How could you say such a terrible thing? How could you accuse the Jewish people of getting to such a low place? Right? He was thrown into a prison pit with the intent of leaving him there to starve to death until he was rescued by a slave. Now let's contrast this. So you know what? It was tough to live with the Nevi'im. The Nevi'im were very, very harsh and biting in their criticism. They didn't sugarcoat. Person, imagine, you know, the scene in Shul. Davening finishes, and all of a sudden there's a roar from across the Beis Medrash. Points at, you know, he's pointing at Mr. Goldstein there in the corner, and he yells, "Goldstein is a murderer!" Right? Now, Goldstein didn't kill anybody. What did he do? He shamed somebody. He shamed somebody the day before. And the Navi is roaring out. He's shaming Mr. Goldstein too. But you know, Mr. Goldstein needs that right now. The Navi is doing it at the command of Hashem. This is how it worked. And the Nevi'im were resented. And that was why we lost the Nevi'im. And that's why we don't have Nevi'im today, because Klal Yisrael reached a place where they couldn't handle it. Let's contrast this with how it worked a few hundred years earlier. David HaMelech was accused by the Navi of terrible things, right? I have to understand what a monarch was. People did not accuse monarchs. People only praise the monarchs. And any soothsayer, whatever it is, who wanted to have a good parnasa, and more than that, wanted to keep his head on his shoulders, prophesied only great things for the monarchs. So now, the Navi comes to David and tells him that Hashem is basically accusing him of the worst aveiros. And it was a lot more subtle than that. We're not getting into that whole parsha right now. Accusing him of the worst aveiros. David HaMelech simply lowered his face in shame, lowered his head in shame, but even more than that, allowed it to become publicized. He allowed it to become publicized. David's aveiros became common knowledge. And David did not attempt to fight that. David suffered humiliation for the rest of his life because of that. For the rest of his life, David suffered humiliation. Kept his head lowered. Said, Chatosi negdi tamid. Right? On the contrary, he went along with it. He always kept himself. He kept it opposite his eyes, that chet. And Klal Yisrael, until the end of David's life, people were viewing him as a person who lost his favor with Hashem. You imagine that, one of the shining stars of our history, a person who lost his favor with Hashem. It was only after David's death that Hashem demonstrated openly for the whole Jewish people that no, David is one of my closest, most beloved people. When David was chased away by Absalom, many saw it and interpreted it as a person who had been in favor with Hashem and lost it because of his avarice and is now being banished like happened other times. David bore that humiliation. And this is David lowering his head. David knew how to utilize the gift of Nevi'im. And the effect of this was that at the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, it was already dropping. It was dropping. But we still had Nevi'im to make it very, very clear exactly what the complaints were, what the grievances were. We got it back 70 years later. That's how Chazal put it. The first Beis HaMikdash, Nisgala Avoinam, Nisgala Kitzam. Because their sins were being openly advertised. So the Beis HaMikdash came back shortly afterwards. Those who wanted to, even though it was reaching a point where Klal Yisrael would not be able to stomach Nevi'im for much longer, but those who wanted to connected. And the result was, the Beis HaMikdash was back 70 years later. The latter ones, second Beis HaMikdash, even though they're also, we had the Chachamim telling us what the causes were, but it wasn't with the same fire. It wasn't with the same charge, with the same electricity of the Nevi'im bringing the direct word of Hashem and throwing it in their faces. And therefore, it's already been 2,000 years. And we haven't gotten it back. So the ability to be able to hear harsh admonition and to lower our heads and say, what can I do with it? What can I do with it to make me better? Rather than to fight it, to respond indignantly, to respond self-righteously, and to just stay in the same place. So this is what he's saying. This is the place to apply mayrech, right? Cowardice. We'll see some baishas also. Baishas, shame. When Hashem admonishes us through his edim. His edim means his warners. To be meid can also mean to warn. Right, we have the Nevi'im, we don't have now, unfortunately. And then we have his good warners and his bad warners. His good warners are, if we have Rabbanim, who are telling us off, to realize that that's a gift to utilize. Those are his good warners. And the bad warners are, Rachmana Litzlan, when that doesn't work and it has to take harsher forms. When Rachmana Litzlan, there can be a set of Nuremberg laws that are basically delineating things that it says in the Torah. Jews should not be marrying non-Jews. They didn't take it from the Chachamim, so it came from the other direction. Jews are not allowed to join the non-Jewish places of entertainment, etc. So at least then to be able to get the messages. And where do you use the mida of brazenness? Use it there. On the contrary, when you have people who are trying to undermine the Torah, That's where you stand up and speak up. Ulazhir min hagnus. Uloivish hachotim. Uloichiach haktanu vagdoilim. And to warn against, to admonish against wrongdoing, to shame sinners, to admonish great people and small people, meaning not just be able to be admonished, to admonish powerful people also, to be able to stand up and say this is wrong, even if it's going to be an unpopular stance. Therefore, this is very important, to be able to put yourself in a place to associate yourself with a Rav, with leaders, who'll be able to say it as it is, who'll be able to hit you over the head by insisting on only being in a position where everything will be sugarcoated. No one will ever tell me anything I don't want to hear. Right? What do I hear somebody say? That sometimes, you know, people want to have a Rav who sees no evil and does no evil. Now, does no evil, okay. Sees no evil. Okay? That sounds good, right? We want a Rav who sees it. We want a Rav who sees it. And can give it to us over the head. Okay. You know, let's take a few minutes now to just address in Yana de Yema, to address where we stand now in the year. I'll start from this direction. Chazal give an example of what Yisurin is. Chazal give us an example of what Yisurin is. What is suffering? What's an example of suffering? Chazal tell us, you stick your hand into your pocket, you wanted to pull out a 10-shekel coin, you came up with a 5-shekel coin. And now you know what? You're going to have to stick your hand into your pocket again. That's Yisurin. That's suffering. What's the understanding here? So the truth is, the simple understanding is to bring out the chesed of Hashem. Yisurim, troubles, are a very strong form of kapara. And Chazal are telling us that you should know that if you're attuned to this, and even the small, irritating things that happen throughout the day, if you can say, this is Hashem bringing it to me, and I'm accepting it from Him as a form of Yisurin, that will go a long way to cleansing us. But if I may suggest that there's also a deeper intent, that there's also, another intent to relate to these things as Yisurin. Now, the idea is not to turn us into kvetches, right? To train us to understand that every time you come up with the wrong coin, you just underwent a traumatic experience. But the idea is to understand like this. Hashem is intensely focused on us. And He loves us intensely. He loves us more than any love we've ever experienced. Even more than that, any love we've ever experienced is a little bit of Hashem's love trickling down to us. And Hashem is focused all the time. Hashem never is distracted from you personally. Now, if that's true, then whenever I stick my hand into my pocket, I should come up with the right coin. What is that like, saying it's too petty for Hashem? It's not too petty for Hashem. It's also not, Hashem is able to be on top of an awful lot. Hashem is on top of much, much, much smaller things that are happening on a mass scale, right? Hashem is making sure that the nerves in every ant's leg are working all the time. So the coins in your pocket are much less complex. So the sensitive person will actually feel a certain distance when that happens. If Hashem were really as close in a way that His love is really reflected by His love, that would never happen. Why should it happen? Why should it happen? And these are all the smaller symptoms of the fact that we are not living in that open state that Hashem really wants to have with us. When Hashem, when that happens, I stick my hand into my pocket and Hashem says, I can give him put the 10 shekel coin into his hand, but I'm going to hold back. That's something that should hurt. Why is Hashem holding back? The answer is because it's true. Right now, there is a certain distance. Hashem is keeping back kiviyachol and not allowing us to feel him in our lives in the way that would naturally be.
Isn't that ever since sin of that? I mean, since the beginning of time, like, we don't see Hashem. Like, if he made it that every single time you put your hand in and you got out the coin, then you wouldn't be struggling to see Hashem. I mean, isn't that way he created the world from the beginning?
Oh, isn't that the way he created the world? So here's really where I want to go. And here's really what we should appreciate in order to understand what we're mourning for. It's a classic question that's asked by the Rishonim. Why does the Torah describe the schar for mitzvahs in material terms? Right? Familiar with that question? The Torah does not talk about Olam Haba. It gives allusions to it here and there. It's hints. But schar for mitzvahs are what? What are the schar for mitzvahs described in the Torah? You'll have plenty, right? You'll have peace. You'll have health. Your rains will fall at the right time. All of the material affairs will operate optimally, right? So this is the question that's asked all across the board. Why doesn't the Torah describe Olam Haba? Why does it talk in material terms? And the way the question is expressed in the Kuzari, and I want to focus on the Kuzari's approach to this, is that the Kuzari king, right? It's a non-Jewish king debating with the Jewish Chacham, right? The non-Jewish king says to the Jewish Chacham, I see that the promises of other faiths are a lot more juicy than yours. Right? What are you promised? You'll have enough food. You'll have health. There won't be wars. You'll win your enemies. Look at the descriptions of paradise, right, starting with the pearly gates, etc., of the other faiths. So the Kuzari king answers, the Chacham answers, a very startling answer, because it goes very much against what we grew up understanding. He says, what's the chachmah to promise things after death? When nobody can come back and tell you what it's actually like. He says, do you know, all these other religions promise all kinds of things after death, wonderful things. Now take a poor peasant who is a devout Christian. Is he eager to get there? No, he'd rather live 1,000 more years in his lousy, dismal material life. And even though he's all excited about all the wonderful things that are promised back then. So the Kuzari says, the Torah is giving us the instructions. We misunderstand, because, and this is part of the fact that we live in the Churban, we misunderstand the significance of what the Torah is promising. The Torah is telling us, in effect, that if you, if Klal Yisrael as a whole, is keeping the Torah optimally, you can already know what it's like in this world. And what do we mean by that? What we mean by that is as follows. We have to understand what the Beis HaMikdash was. The Beis HaMikdash was the connecting, the sha'ar, we'll call it that, the gate between Shemayim and Va'aretz. It created an opening that the division between Shemayim and Va'aretz, there was a straight opening. Meaning, the way he puts it is, it was constant flow back and forth. Nevi'im were taken up to Shemayim. Malachim came down. There was constant traffic. Olam Haba was not something abstract in the afterlife. There was always live, tangible things going on. Nevi'im came back with reports. Now you have to understand what Nevuah was. Nevuah was not a technicality. Hashem had a message to give. He found the right person to convey it, and that was that. Nevuah was experiencing Olam Haba. Nevuah was the ultimate experience that a person could ever have in this world. And people worked for years toward Nevuah, toward being able to achieve Nevuah. And many, many people achieved it. We know of 48 Nevi'im, right? 48 Nevi'im and 7 Nevi'os. Those are the ones who conveyed Nevuahs for Klal Yisrael, for all generations to study. But there were, the Chazal tell us, there were 1.2 million Nevi'im in Klal Yisrael. People who got personal Nevuah, or people who were the neighborhood Navi. You needed to know, why does your child have an ear infection? You went two buildings over to the local Navi. And he told you exactly. He told you what to do about it. What is Hashem not so happy about? What do you need to do to improve it? But what was actually happening was, to get a Nevuah, the Kuzari says, was a description of such immensity that a person who had nevuah afterwards, he couldn't enjoy any material pleasures anymore because it all paled in comparison. His whole life was just, when am I going to have another nevuah? And he says, at that point already, the dividers between this world and the next world were just like blurred. People didn't mind. Once a person had nevuah, the thought of dying was not at all intimidating. I'll just get back to where I was. I'll get back to that experience. It was something enticing. Now, at the same time, he wanted to stay here a little longer because I can make it even better, right? Moshe Rabbeinu resisted. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to go. But it wasn't the scary thought, because I know exactly what I'm going to. I already experienced it. Looking forward to it. And this comes from applying yourself to the Torah intensely. But this is just the highest symptom of it. This is just the highest symptom. The Kuzari says that when the Torah talks about the health and the peace and the food and the plenty, etc., what's really behind it all is the wording exactly says, let's not let it go over our heads what the Torah is actually saying. The wording of the Torah is, the wording of the Torah is, yeah, it says, I'll give all your rains. You keep my Torah, okay? I'll give you rains at that time. The earth will provide its produce. The trees of the field will provide their food. Each season will overlap the other one. You'll eat, you'll be satiated, you'll live securely, I'll give you peace. There won't be any wild animals, there won't be any swords, you'll chase your enemies, they'll all fall before you. 5 people will chase 100, 100 will chase 10,000. I'll make you multiply, I'll make you fruitful, right? And you'll constantly have to empty out the storehouses from the old produce because you have to bring in the new produce. But here's really the point. These are all symptoms of the fact that I will operate among you in a very open way, and I will be for you, Elikim, in a very open way. In other words, I will be a tangible part of your life. There's a war, sit back and leave it to me. Food, I'm going to pour it on. But it was experienced in a live way. The point is not that, oh, great, we have a lot of food. That's very nice. It's very important to have a lot of food. But it was the thrill of just feeling it being piled on by Hashem. And then what happens? He sells elsewhere. And when there's a little slip, person says the wrong thing to somebody, oh, there's a little splotch on the wall. A warning signal. A little splotch on the wall. By chance, talks a little more, splotch on the garment, right? You're not careful, then it moves on to the arm. This is Hashem living with you in an interactive way. This manifested in all areas of life. Nevuah was the peak. But first of all, people living among Nevi'im were living with that live transmitter. Because he says, even just seeing a Navi get prophecy was an experience that changed you forever. It was a very awesome sight to see. How the person just went into a trance and just lost his senses and collapsed on the ground. This is all symptoms of the Shekhinah living in a live way among us. So the Gozari says, yeah, peace, food, etc. These are all very nice things. But when you are on an ongoing basis living with a reality where you see that the affairs of my life are not run according to natural rules, the rest of the world is running according to natural rules, and I am living with the reality of a divine interaction. When I work harder, I go outside and the grapes are bigger. It's not just, wow, great, I can use a grape instead of a watermelon. How exciting. That's how it sounds like to us. Very, very sweet fruit. You think the date that you ate yesterday was good, you don't know what you're missing. It's the thrill of what's behind it. It's the thrill of getting that personal stroke on the cheek from Hashem. Might not be a Navi, but as manifested in your fruit, as manifested in the messages you were getting from them, all kinds of different areas, right? You worked on your Shmiras HaLashon a little better. Not only did the splotch on the wall go away, but all of a sudden your business started booming more. But these were things that were going on a regular basis. It was the rich experience of living in the embrace of Hashem. Now, in those great days, I don't know for sure exactly to what extent, but we'll talk about the peak, the days of Shlomo HaMelech, which are known as perhaps one of the golden eras of Klal Yisrael. The days of Shmuel HaNavi, the 20 years, which are described as Vayinohu B'nei Yisrael Achrei Hashem, right, where Klal Yisrael was just drawn like magnets after Hashem. However, then I would imagine, I don't know for sure, but I would imagine that yes, the person who was operating, there were very many degrees of this, the person who was operating on the optimal level, he stuck his hand into his pocket and came up with the right coin. Just what? It was a state that was easy to lose. You worked hard, you had that. Had to work in the midbar. You worked hard, you walked out, opened the door, and tripped over your mom. A little bit lax, the mom was 3 feet away. You made some more mistakes, you had to walk a half a block, and all the neighbors saw. Right? This is living with that live divine interaction. And presumably, yes, when it was at its peak, there wasn't tzaddik v'ra'aloi. There wasn't tzaddik v'ra'aloi. That's what the Gemara tells us, right? There's two expressions in the pasuk. Efes ki lo yeh b'chayavim. When Hashem is describing, you're going to be keeping the Torah correctly, you will not have the poor among you. And there's another pasuk that says, ki lo yechdal avim yikarev ha'aretz. Inevitably, there will always be poor people, and therefore help them out. Klal Yisrael say, the Chazal say, it depends on the state of the Jewish people. So, what we're talking about is missing those days, understanding that this is not the Olam Hazeh that Hashem intended for us. This Olam Hazeh is not the Olam Hazeh that Hashem intended for us. Hashem intended for us a much richer Olam Hazeh. An Olam Hazeh where, the division between Ruchnius and Gashmius is all blurred because it all comes together. In your Gashmius, you are feeling in a very live way Hashem's favor being showed to you, right? And this is really what Hashem intended for us.
So he took it away because we didn't listen? Is that what you're saying? Like we got the splotch on the wall and we ignored it, and then whatever, that's basically it.
Because we were not living up to the standard. This was a gradual process. There were ups and downs. Throughout the times of the Shoftim, there were ups and downs. Throughout the time of the kings, there were ups and downs. The kings was already a certain drop. In the times of the Shoftim, the wars, in the times of the kings and the times of the Shoftim looked very different, just for example. What did a war look like in the time of the kings? You had a king like David HaMelech, a very righteous king, had an army, Hashem gave them great success. They went out and they just won supernaturally. What did wars look like in the time of the Shoftim? There was no army. What happened? An enemy came, the Shoftim rallied the people, they came, ragtag, right? Some of the Farshim described when the Voira and Baruch rallied everybody to go fight Sisra. Sofer Meshevet Sofer, the scribes came waving their quills. These were their weapons. They went out, right? The rabbis came with their rulers, right? They went out to war, and what happened, right? Went out a whole bunch of people waving pencils, shtenders, this, that, going up against the big professional army. What happened? They came and started approaching, and the enemy started dropping before they even got there. So that's an expression Chazal point out. Vayoham Hashem ismachane kenan. Hashem would just confound them. This was an expression that stopped once we dropped to the level of kings, which was still an amazing period. David HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech has noted, Mamash ish tachas gafna v'tachas teinasei, one of the most optimal periods of Klal Yisrael, but it was still not quite the level that we were seeing when we were living with the system of Shoftim, where there was no organized government, a reality of Hashem hu malkechem. No organized government, no organized army. Klal Yisrael is keeping the Torah. Mavig Gemel has said, you have to know, Ish HaYashar Be'Einav Yaseh is described, a few times that term is used to describe the period of the Shoftim. We take that in a very negative way. Each man did what was right in his eyes. Yes, the failures that happened are the result of each man living, doing what was right in his eyes. But the general picture was all of Klal Yisrael doing what was right in their eyes in a very literal way, made for a very, very glorious period. You read Shoftim, it's a little confusing because you see a problem. But then how are the good times described in Shoftim? You know how they're described in Shoftim? Not an elaboration. There are a lot of, you go through it, you see it's about two-thirds of the period, these fast forwards. Then everything was fine for 30 years. Then something happened. So we read it, we see problem after problem, right? The boring parts of the fast forwards, which is about two-thirds of the period, we don't even notice. Right? this is what we are longing. And then again, we talk about Shlomo HaMelech, which is already after the drop. But the period of Shlomo HaMelech is a time of optimal reality in Gashmias because of the Ruchmias. And yes, since then it was like this. And then it started going like this. Because it was hard to live up to. You had to work hard. You had to be treading water intensely. Hashem had high demands. And the rewards, returns were immense. But it was hard to keep up to. It was hard to keep up to that standard, and things started slipping. Things started slipping. But this is the Olam Hazeh that Hashem intended for us. We have to realize quality of life, the way the Gra describes it, between before the Chumen of the first Beis HaMikdash and afterwards, is the difference between a live body and a dead body. That's how the Kuzari describes it also. He says, today, we as Klal Yisrael, you want to know what our level of vitality is? He says it even further. He says, When the Chacham describes all this to the king of Kuzar says, if so, you're basically saying that the whole system of Karbonis and Beis HaMikdash, that was the source of it all. That was the power plant. That was what brought that immense flow of Shechin into Klal Yisrael that manifested everywhere, in everyone's home, in everybody's field. So the king of Kuzar kind of like thinks he's gonna stump the Chacham now. He says, if so, what you're describing is mamish the head and the heart. It's the source of vitality of the Jewish people. If so, now you're a dead people. What's the response of the Chacham? A dead or more than dead? He said, it's a dry bone. It's not a dead body. It's a dry bone. Our vitality, our quality of life today is like that of a dry bone versus a live body. Now, sounds strange because Baruch Hashem, we do have a vibrant Yiddishkeit. But you know what? It's all relative. It's all relative. Because Ari goes on to say, but don't say if so, that maybe the Christians are better off than you now, the Muslims are better off than you now. He says, a dry bone is something organic. It's something that could have a life to it. It's something that will get back its life. A dry bone is a lot more shaykh to life than a picture of a very healthy, powerful person painted on a wall. That's what he says. So let's realize that, yes, Hashem wants to be so much closer to us. Hashem wants to hold us in his embrace and wants us to be feeling his interaction with us on an ongoing basis. Let's not suffice for this. Let's turn back to Hashem and say, we want it too. We want to be living in your embrace. We want everything that you want for us. And we want to give you the nachas now of telling you that we long for it. This is what we're trying to do in these days, to try to express some of a mutual element. We can't love Hashem, and we can't long for Hashem in the way that he loves and longs for us. We don't have the capacity. But to be able to turn to him and say, we want you also. We want those days. We're not going to just settle for what is now. That is what's actually building it. Hashem, when he sees enough of that, that will all be what will provide the foundations for it when the time will come, and to realize that it will come. So that's all part of this picture. We're not talking about things of the past. It will come. It will come. It can still be this week when suddenly there will be that awesome appearance, kiviyachol, of the Shekhinah, and all of a sudden see those who are trying to undermine Yiddishkeit suddenly come with bowed heads and say, sorry, we were wrong. And to see all the nations of the world will be coming head over heels, each one trying to have a share in helping to get the Jewish people to Israel. And this is something that we could still see this week. Let's hope for it and anticipate it and be zeichet to see it. But whatever the case is, the realization that the very hope is itself what's giving Hashem nachas and is itself what is building towards it. We just don't know exactly where the finish line is. We'll see if him here will be a main event of Hashem.
Thank you.